More of Lake Effect Now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. Float therapy, or floating, has recently become popular in the health and wellness fields, but the practice actually goes back to the early 1950s. Today, floating is gaining traction as a way to help treat things like athletic recovery, chronic pain, anxiety, stress, and insomnia. The low sensory and weightless environment can also help people with post-traumatic stress disorder relax in a controlled environment. Now, a scientific study through Fraidert and Float Milwaukee is exploring how this therapy is helping patients with PTSD. Dr. Terry DeRune Cassini is the lead psychologist for the Trauma Psychology Service at Fraidert and the Medical College of Wisconsin. Andy Larson is the owner of Float Milwaukee. They join Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski for this month's Fit for You segment, and Larson begins by explaining what people will experience in most floating facilities.
Most float centers are set up like some kind of a spa. I mean, it really varies all over the board. Sometimes it's in someone's house. You know, the way we have it at Float Milwaukee is kind of a high-end spa sort of feel. You go back, and instead of getting into a room and getting like a massage or something, you go in the room, and there's going to be a shower in the room, and there's going to be some kind of float, like tank type thing. We have three float pods, which sort of look like clamshells, like big ceramic sort of tubs with like a clamshell opening. You get in it, you lay down, you pull the lid down. It's very large inside. You control the whole environment, so it doesn't really have that claustrophobic feel that a lot of people sort of fear when they first hear about this. It's only about 10 inches of water inside. You have about 1,000 pounds of Epsom salt, so that's what actually allows you to sort of lay back, let every muscle relax. You can even fall asleep if you want. You're still going to float. We keep the water about your skin temperature, so after a while, you don't feel the water. You literally feel like you're just kind of hovering in space. And then you can control things like light and music. So if you want, you can turn everything off. That's where you get kind of that, what people will sometimes call sensory deprivation. We try and stay away from that because really a lot of your senses are enhanced in the tank as opposed to you're not really being deprived of anything. But if you turn the light off, the music off, you're going to have complete darkness. You can't even tell if your eyes are open. All you'll hear is your heartbeat, maybe your breath. Sometimes I hear my eyelids flutter, which is interesting. We also have what are called float pools in our facility. So those are round, they're larger, and there's no lid. So sometimes people are still a little unsure about a cover, so that's another option. They're also bigger for people to kind of spread out, a little less humid. They're actually the exact pools that are being used in clinical research in Oklahoma. So I actually visited down there, got the same ones to kind of expand access to people that just to get as many people floating as possible because of what I believe it can do and what I've seen it do.
Right. So you mentioned there's essentially a weightlessness provided.
Right.
You're taking away all the things that ail our sensories every day.
Yeah.
Work, phone, driving,
yep.
Environment, all that kind of stuff. And you're eliminating that essentially.
Yes.
So what common ailments does floating treat?
Sure.
Or what are people looking to get help with in this kind of environment?
It's really all over the board. I would say the most frequent ones I have seen are things like chronic pain. You're removing gravity. You're having an Epsom salt saturated solution. And so no pressure on your joints while you're in there. The ability to let every muscle relax. It's something that I just remember the first time I did it thinking afterwards that I feel like there were muscles I relaxed that I probably have never fully relaxed in my entire life. That's kind of how I felt afterwards. Things like anxiety, it can really help with once you kind of get in there and let yourself go. Stress, for sure. People use it for like insomnia, for jet lag. It's really all across the board that I've seen and heard about and experienced myself. So,
and this is where you come in, Dr. DeRune Cassini. So what you guys are doing is setting the stage for some clinical trials with the treatment of PTSD and floating. So your work and background is with survivors of trauma. So how did you come to this specialized field? And then how did that lead you to floating?
Yeah, so I'm the lead psychologist for our trauma psychology service at Fraidert and the Medical College of Wisconsin. Being a level one trauma center, we see a lot of patients who have experienced extreme stress to the point that they develop PTSD. And so it's a disorder in our trauma population that can affect anywhere between about 20 to 40% of individuals exposed to trauma. You know, we have some really great treatments for PTSD, but it doesn't benefit everybody. And so there's a lot of room to develop additional interventions in order to really help individuals, A, not suffer from the continued stress of having a disorder like PTSD, and then also potentially down the road reducing the risk for even developing PTSD, which is something that Justin and I have talked about doing down the road.
And so how did you two meet and find this convergence?
Yeah, we were just talking about that.
Yeah.
It was about 4 years ago, and Justin just cold emailed me. He had seen an article about the work that we do related to PTSD at the medical center. And so he just asked if I'd want to come out and float and see what it's like and talk about a potential collaboration.
Yeah, and it was great that she, one, said yes and wasn't all like, what's floating? This is crazy. And two, that she actually enjoyed the float. And yeah. I remember you were very relaxed afterwards.
Oh, my gosh.
When we were talking,
I think I had to sit down for a few minutes before I left because I was so relaxed.
Right. Yep.
But I think what struck me the most was, you know, when someone has PTSD, their nervous system is on overdrive. I liken it to they've developed an alarm system for the White House. And so all the parts of their brain and nervous system, their central nervous system that's responsible for keeping them safe is on overdrive. And we need to scale that back to an alarm system for like a 3-bedroom house. And so we really need to have some neurobiological benefit of whatever treatment that we're doing to bring that nervous system down. And after floating, I felt like this could really benefit the relaxation component of treatment, of really helping people to bring down that anxiety set point because it's so high when individuals have PTSD.
And I imagine it was interesting for you to go in just as an individual and experience that, but then connect it to your research. Because what other typical PTSD or trauma-informed research had you been doing before this? And then how did this influence, like, well, this is a new way to think about
That's a great question. So a lot of the research that we do is focused on psychosocial risk factors of who develops PTSD, as well as neurobiological risk factors. So we're really interested in understanding the interplay between what the individual has experienced before the trauma, what they're experiencing after, and then also certain biomarkers and certain levels of neural functioning and how that might confer risk for developing PTSD or help us understand the mechanism of PTSD that they have developed. And so a lot of our research is focused on things that are related to what's called the sympathetic nervous system, which is that fight or flight response and the activation that helps us feel alarmed when we should be alarmed, and then puts us on edge to the point where we can fight or flee. Unfortunately, with individuals with PTSD, they often feel like that almost all the time, and they don't give that nervous system a break. So that's where floating can really come in, because in a lot of ways, I see floating as augmenting the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the part of the nervous system that's responsible for bringing you back down from a stressor. And for a lot of individuals, those two nervous systems and how they're functioning are pretty dysregulated. And so I see, you know, it was interesting when I was floating because I was trying to be very present and mindful of my own experience, but it was so hard not to go to, oh my gosh, this seems to make so much sense for that parasympathetic augmentation and how we can help individuals relax.
It's awesome that you felt that right away with your first float, too.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
both the, yourself and immediately like putting it together, which is what I hope for, giving away a free float.
Yeah. So. It led to many things.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Well, that's kind of my next question. You know, is it, Andy, have you found it difficult for people to, I mean, there's one willingness to try it because
right.
people are coming to do it, but is it difficult to just separate yourself from your everyday surroundings to go from...
You mean just generally
just,
going into a flow and being able to get
flow.
Into it? Oh,
yeah,
for sure.
Like,
and yeah.
I would imagine it's difficult.
It can be.
If people have trouble, you know, there's always meditation exercises.
Right.
Or like if you sit still in yoga, if you're having trouble
right.
doing that for 5 minutes, you know,
yeah.
immersing yourself in a sensorless
yeah.
place for an hour would be hard.
I mean, it takes a bit of a commitment. So, right, this is how it was for me my first time. Like, I had no experience with meditation or anything. I just read about it and said, this sounds cool. I should try it. And, you know, I got in there, and for one thing, the place I did it, there was no light option. So when you got in there, it was immediately pitch black. And I had a little bit of a, like, whoa, wait a second, like, to go right from reality and light and everything directly into pitch black, it definitely took me a second to sort of breathe. I sat up, pushed on the door, made sure everything was fine. Then I was totally fine. And then it became just like that game of, okay, this is cool, I'm waitlist, but now what do I do for like an hour? Like, you're so used to being on your phone, checking emails, whatever. And so I just had to be present to myself that, you know, I'm here to try this, and I'm just gonna, I really just focus on my breath, which turns out I really was just learning how to meditate in a way in that first float, just forced, it kind of forced me into doing it. So that's why, right, I say sometimes it's sort of like meditation for dummies or whatever. It just kind of makes you find a way to do it. So focusing on the breath, letting myself relax, letting everything go, and then that's where I just sort of disappeared from the world, and that's what led me to this sort of almost sense of awe that that can happen, just laying in some, you know, salt water or whatever, and to feel that at peace and sort of relaxed afterwards was, right, what led me, you know, kind of down this path. And definitely there's people that come in from all walks of life, from all areas, and it's definitely harder for some people than others. You know, if you don't have any sort of experience like meditating or breathing, it can be harder to sort of get yourself to relax. And so that's why we say sometimes it'll take two or three floats to really get a feel for how it'll be for you because of that. But yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And that's what scares some people from even trying it, because they can't even imagine, you know, I can't even imagine being with myself for an hour in like, yeah, the dark, or, yeah, you know, even with the light on, just to be by myself without my phone. But we all can use it, you know, just it's good to step away from things for a while and reset. And this is just one of many ways that can be done, you know.
Terry, part of your research is kind of putting these thoughts and feelings to a scientific method, right?
Yeah.
And mapping out those success. So explain your methodology for this upcoming study and what you hope it achieves.
Yeah. So we're doing what's called a prospective cohort pilot study. And those are fancy words that mean basically we're recruiting a pretty small number of subjects, all of whom have PTSD. And we are going to have them float for three sessions, and we're going to do a bunch of assessments related to their psychological symptoms, related to their physiology, that sympathetic nervous system activation I talked about, and then also just their perceptions of the experience, because, you know, at this point, we really also want to hear subjectively from individuals, what do they perceive as the benefit that they have experienced? And then we're going to do all of that after the three floats, and with some intermediary symptom assessments as well, and follow those individuals and look at change over time in those individuals. We're not yet going to compare it to people who aren't floating that have PTSD or maybe some other sort of PTSD intervention. We'll do that down the road. But first, we want to establish feasibility. We can do this and have this community academic partnership, and then that we see individual benefits across time. So those are kind of called within group changes. And then we'd like to really take this from there to some bigger studies.
You mentioned the community academic partnership, and it's, I imagine it's somewhat unique to partner with a place in the public that people will go to perform these trials. Usually you have to go to a hospital. It's a very regulated environment.
Yeah.
Not that your Float Milwaukee isn't, right, regulated and specific,
yeah,
but you mentioned you got specific pools that were also used in the clinical,
right,
facility. So,
yeah,
how do you,
I mean, I wanted to do that for a couple of reasons. One, just because I wanted more access to as many people as possible. And I actually went down, and when I visited with Justin Feinstein in Tulsa, I floated in each of his pools just for my own benefit to get the experience. I also talked with him for a few hours. And I mean, it's clear that if you're trying to get people, and I always, in my mind, I had this idea of, oh, it would be awesome if I could somehow help with research, because he's looking for as many people as possible because he can't do everything himself, you know? So to think about if someone already has PTSD or anxiety and you're introducing them into this float world, it's a lot more anxiety-inducing to see this, like, clamshell that you're going to close over you versus this just open pool with the light on that looks you can totally control. And so I wanted to have that additional access to people just from a general public perspective, but I also wanted to have that for, you know, should down the road something like this research project come about. And so that's, I think, has served me very well and served my customers very well too, to have those options. And now it'll, yeah, serve the study well, which, mm-hmm, I guess that'll be interesting because we're going to include all, both the pods and the pools in the study. So it'll be interesting to see if we get different responses from,
yeah,
people depending on where they're, which one they're floating in. Too.
Yeah, and we didn't want to exclude people who have PTSD who might have some sort of claustrophobia,
mm-hmm,
or be fearful. So having the pool is going to be really important. It'll,
yeah,
be more applicable then.
So what are your hopes? You've both had your personal experiences with floating, and Andy, you've heard testimonials,
yeah,
of running your business. But with this preliminary, you know, step of this study, what do you hope this leads to in the greater research of PTSD and treating it.
I'm really hopeful that preliminarily in this kind of academic community partnership that we're demonstrating what we're seeing in these more controlled research environments, that we're seeing a physiologic benefit, this reduced hyperarousal, people experiencing kind of that set point coming down of their anxiety, and also that the reporting of their symptoms has significantly reduced. I'm also hopeful, one of the most troubling pieces of having PTSD is difficulty sleeping, both falling asleep and staying asleep. And I know in the literature and anecdotally, there's been reports of people really benefiting their sleep after floating. And so I'm really interested in seeing if that also improves. Because I think, you know, sleep is such a tricky thing for a lot of people, but it's particularly problematic in individuals with PTSD. And so this could be a great contribution to the literature in that regard as well.
Yeah, I would agree with all that. And I would just say, I just want people to know this is out there as something that can help them. And sometimes people need to see like some kind of proof before they're willing to accept it. And so my hope is through this study and through, people can see, there's some sort of scientific proof that we're showing it's benefiting. And then maybe people that were a little bit unsure about trying it, that'll be enough to get them to try it. And then that can help them. Because that's ultimately what we want, is we want people to get help, whether it's complementing something else they're doing, meditation, yoga, some kind of medicine, whatever, or whether it's like, this is the only thing that maybe works for them. Like, we just want people to have that option and know it's out there.
Dr. Terry DeRune Cassini is the lead psychologist for the Trauma Psychology Service at Froedtert and the Medical College of Wisconsin. Andy Larson is the owner of Float Milwaukee. They joined Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski for this month's Fit for You series, and you can explore our previous segments at wuwm.com. Lake Effect will continue in just a moment on 89.7 WUWM.